Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host, and today we are going to talk about water conflict and water cooperation, especially on an international stage. And I'm here with Britt Scheinbaum. She's a water conflict specialist. She's also with Isle Utilities as their head of East Coast Technology Assessment Group. Britt, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, Travis. Thanks for having me today.
Sure, and I should also mention that you are a former WEF employee. So it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
This will be a little bit of a different topic for our podcast, water conflict. What does that even mean? What is water conflict?
Well, we like to think of it as people going to war over water. That's typically what you hear. Water wars became such a hot topic like in the 80s, 90s. Yeah. I think of it a little differently. I like to think of conflict as a potential for cooperation. So that's how I look at it.
And so it's one of those, when there is a problem, there is an opportunity, actually.
That's right.
Like kind of in everything in the water sector.
Always.
You were telling me a story of kind of how you got started on this path, which I think illustrates the issue a little bit and highlights one of the big areas for this in the world. And it started with you taking a trip, a day trip into the West Bank. So kind of share that story with us.
Sure. I took a trip to Israel by myself back in 2013 and rented a car and drove around for a few weeks and wound up in the West Bank where I had hired someone to take me on an art tour. And during that tour, he asked me what I did, and I was working for the Water Environment Federation at the time, so I kind of fumbled and just said, well, I work sort of in water. And he said, oh, good, come help us. We don't have a lot of it. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I never really thought about that before. I didn't know much about that region of the world and its water issues. I mean, I knew about its political issues, but not much else. So I became interested and wondered where the intersection of water and conflict happened. My academic background was in international relations, so I had a previous interest in conflict anyway. So I went home and I talked to my friends at WEF who pointed out some studies that had been done at Oregon State University where they discovered that people are much more cooperative around water internationally than they are in conflict. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective. And I had some very good friends and mentors who pushed me to go back to graduate school and study this.
Yeah, very, very interesting. What have you learned about, let's say, the situation with Israel and Palestine and the West Bank and the water dynamic there?
Right. So first, I found out how little water they have, which is intriguing considering how they manage it. The Israelis manage their water very, very well. And the second thing I learned was how, in fact, cooperative they are around water with their regional neighbors, which is not what you would expect
at all. Right.
So there are projects happening there that are trying to improve the situations, and it's fascinating. It's not perfect. There's still obviously lots of dispute, lots of room for improvement, but yeah, there's a lot more going on than you would really
realize. And I mean, of course, Israel has fabled for their technology, their water technology.
And that's the other thing I found out, just how innovative they are with that. And they really have put so much capital and other, you know, human resources into making that a priority. I was at a meeting in October in D.C., where the head of the Israeli Water Authority was present and the head of the Palestinian Water Authority was present, and they were discussing with a number of folks in the water industry in the United States, you know, what they do, how they approach water management, why they've been so successful. And they had with them a capital investor. And at one point he stands up in the meeting and he says, are there any investors here in the room? No, there was nobody. And he said, in Israel, we would not have a meeting about water without an investor at present.
That's a very good point, because that will then help to spur actual activity and getting something done.
Right.
But that's fascinating to have been there with the head of the water authority for Israel and Palestine and people back in those nations to know that even kind of thing is happening.
And, right. You wouldn't expect the two of them to be in a room together. It's not with the media.
Right. Well, maybe we need to do a better job telling the stories of water cooperation, especially internationally, and especially between places where you see a lot of conflict politically. Or, I mean, it's a positive to see these things.
It is a positive. I mean, it has real potential.
Some of the other places where water has led to conflict, I just want to kind of have you tell some of those stories. Syria has obviously been in the news for the past few years with the horrible conflict going on there. But a lot of the origins of that have their roots in water. So could you tell that story?
Well, in 2014, a research paper was published where they discovered that, well, they came to understand, I should say, that water, while not the catalyst for the problems in Syria, was a large contributor to what has happened. And essentially, mismanagement of their water systems put them in a very vulnerable position when a several years long drought occurred. And that obviously affected their agriculture, which is a major source of income for a large portion of the population. Without water, not much agriculture. So that rural population then began to migrate. And that's another aspect of water conflict that's very key. It causes, water scarcity causes migration. So when people migrate, they head to places where other people are, where there's opportunity, and that puts pressure then, and in this case, the Syrian cities, on their infrastructure and their social structure and everything else.
Jobs.
Everything.
And
that great people grate on each other's nerves. Because not everybody is the same type of Syrian or the same type of religion. And so it, you know, sparks trouble. So the citizenry then protested, and that was not handled very peacefully by the reigning government. And
yeah,
there you have it.
Right.
Blame it.
And water, like you said, water was big contributing factor
to that. And so you're seeing that in other places now, like Iran. Protests erupted this December and are ongoing for identical reasons.
Yeah. So can you build that out just a little bit? What has happened in Iran?
Well, in Iran, in order to be self-sufficient, they really had to harness their water power. And in doing so, it may not have always been managed so well. And with the droughts of the last few years, again, it comes into the spotlight that there isn't enough to go around. It's not handled well. It's been spoiled. And so the mostly rural population then protests, because they're the first to feel it in terms of their industry and agriculture. So they've been protesting, and we'll see.
And then also, people then, like you said, relocate to the cities and the urban areas, and then it puts those pressures there. So you have protests out in the rural areas, pressures in the urban areas.
So the bottom line, water management is essential. Sustainability in the long term is really, really key.
And especially as with climate change, we expect to see these dry, hot places get drier and hotter. Therefore, water conflict probably elevating. I think I've seen things in the news, you know, about the United States Department of Defense, you know, identifying conflict over water as a big global concern, a security issue.
There's a good piece in Foreign Policy magazine a month or two ago saying that that's an area that our diplomats, our public servants, have to pay real attention to and become well versed in, because it is a major source of dispute. So, you know, people, they need to understand what they're working with in each country.
You just mentioned that places that manage it well. And so you talked about a couple of those before. Do you want to mention those now?
Off the top of my head, the three that come to mind, people are most familiar with are Israel, Singapore, and Denmark. Mm-hmm. And they do a phenomenal job of managing their water, investing in their water industry, and educating their public in water conservation, which is really what seems to be the bottom line that the citizenry can do, is conserve their water.
By studying those places where they do a good job managing their water, maybe some of those practices can be carried to other locations.
Yeah, there are some common denominators there, and just beginning to understand them. And it's very interesting because we like to isolate things. You know, we want to know, is it just top down or is it grassroots? Is it bottom up? Where does that good culture of water management come from? Well, it's both. You have to nurse both ends at the same time. And so in those three places, they had a very strong and supportive legislation in favor of the water industries, as well as a citizenry that became educated on the subject and supported it through their own actions of conservation and care. It's everything.
The other thing you talked about is water can be a source of conflict between countries, but it can also be a source of collaboration or cooperation. Yeah. And you talked about finding that in transboundary areas, that's where cooperation often is best.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
One of the things that study at Oregon State University that I was pointed to when I came back from Israel was finding that people are willing to cooperate over water over international boundaries. It's a little tougher in internal, within international boundaries, but across national boundaries, they do quite well. And water is sort of it can supersede needs, your own needs. And so they can see a higher purpose and a higher good for managing it well between states. And so people can invest in it without the typical friction that comes.
That's interesting because a lot of times what I've learned about and seen in the United States is, you know, the typical tug of war between states, Maryland and Virginia, Maryland and Pennsylvania, whatever states you want to take, and water issues, or even one county to another. And I think a lot of the environmental community and folks like to say, listen, water doesn't know political boundaries. It's going to flow where it flows.
Right.
So you should think more holistically. You should think from a watershed perspective. It seems like in some of these international cases that countries are able to do that. Yeah. And so you mentioned a number that I thought was really interesting of how many of these transboundary areas have been identified.
There are 286 shared water basins.
Okay.
So that's 286 potential areas of cooperation.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned also that, you know, U.S. and Canada.
We have a very, very good one at the Columbia River Basin. That's a great model and has been in place for some time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, U.S. and Canada try to work together pretty aggressively in the Great Lakes area.
Definitely some shared incentives there for sure.
Yeah.
That carryover.
Very interesting. I just saw something recently about San Diego and, you know, Mexico, and trying to address some of the discharges is at the Tijuana River that comes out there and, you know, needing to try to get some cooperation across the border to address that waterway.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some specific places and projects and just what's happening. You mentioned something with the Red Sea and the Dead Sea.
There's been a big project underway there to use desalinated water and provide water to the surrounding nations of Jordan, Israelis, and Palestinians.
That's a good, there's international cooperation there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's interesting is a lot of the conflict coming from water scarcity or pollution, a lot of it happens around the developing world. But now, you know, we're starting to see things like Cape Town happen. And that's, I guess, within South Africa. But I could imagine that as climate change and, you know, effects increase, that you'll see more strain on the developed world in ways that water coming across boundaries is put into play. And it seems like this whole is going to become more and more important.
It is. We have this assumption that water is abundant, which is not false. It's just that it's abundant as long as you take care of it. And how you handle the water is really your indicator for how sustainable you're going to be in the long term. In conflict theory, adaptability is a very important piece to understand, because the more adaptable a person or a society, the better their chances to withstand any kind of pressures. Same thing in water management. If they're adaptable and they can see the long term and manage their water well and have support both from the top and the bottom, the better their chances in the long run. We have plenty of water to go around. It's just how you use it.
Yeah. I like that adaptability is a key part of conflict resolution.
Very much.
Yeah. Are there other key parts of conflict resolution that fit into the water space?
Sure. I mean, finding shared goals is of enormous importance in any kind of conflict. And that's what water provides. It provides a shared goal, a shared reason to cooperate. Tools. We talked earlier about technology in this space, and that's a huge element of this, because having the right tools to be able to implement and manage the water with they're very tangible things that you can work with and everyone can come together on.
So technology is a tool, a way to manage the water, that everybody can, hey, here's a path forward, basically.
Right. And it's an evolution. I mean, with those tools, you get better systems. So employ them and use them.
Mm-hmm. So part of turning conflict into cooperation would involve these concepts. And that's shared goals, technology is a path forward, those type of things.
Yeah. Encouraging, stimulating adaptability.
Adaptability. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dialogue.
Dialogue.
Creating spaces for dialogue. Enormous.
Yeah. It's interesting, just thinking very philosophically about this, how these, and as a conflict resolution person, you understand it's like these are things you hear about from the international country to country level. But these seem also like very individual to individual conflict resolution tools. Right. Maybe less the technology piece, but adaptability, dialogue, shared goals. You can apply those to the personal relationships, to international relations.
Exactly. I mean, we are people after all, dealing with other people. So it comes down to people in the room.
Yeah.
Human behavior is a large part of this.
Yeah. But then water.
And understand how people use their water and what it means to them. And that's very essential.
Well, Brett, thanks so much for the conversation. Great stuff.
Thank you for having me, Charles. It's been a pleasure.
Words on Water.